Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com/welcome to now. We wake up every day saying, how can we make this show better than the day before? Because we're lead pipe wielding professionals.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
But to say that Bill's not a great coach is beyond the pale, off the charts.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
It's wild that all the NFL teams that had job openings this year, he didn't get one.
Earlier on the show, rock and roll legend Jon Bon Jovi, Dolphins offensive tackle Teron Armstead. Coming up, Pro Football Focus lead NFL draft analyst Trevor Sikkema. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show. To say there's a lot going on in our world and the world of sports is a total, complete understatement. We've got 3 hours to cover it all, thank goodness, right here on the Roku channel, this Rich Eisen Show, terrestrial radio affiliate, Sirius XM, Odyssey, and more. We say hello to everybody out there watching and listening. Jon Bon Jovi is here, and so is the Masters. Yeah. How about them apples? Woo. The Masters about to tee off after some rain delayed the proceedings at Augusta National. We're going to keep our eye on all of that today on this program, all 3 hours of it. Teron Armstead, who's here from the Miami Dolphins offensive line in Los Angeles, part of the NFL broadcast boot camp that's going on at the NFL Media Group at the NFL Network all week long. He's going to stop by here in studio in hour number two. We've got the NFL draft on our mind. And yes, O.J. Simpson passed away today, and we'll talk about that on this program over the next 3 hours as well. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial. You want to talk about anything? Let's go. The NBA playoffs is right around the corner. Some teams are clinching. T.J. Jefferson, you know you got the Mavericks coming your way for the Los Angeles Clippers. That's a neat first-round matchup that we've already got locked in right now.
It's going to be a good one, man.
The Knicks clinched a playoff spot last night. The Milwaukee Bucks appear to have Giannis still at their disposal. We will see how his calf strain responds to the rest that he's going to have for the rest of the regular season. The Warriors, we didn't even discuss it yesterday, shooting threes like crazy. We had the Stanley Cup here yesterday, the NHL playoffs right around the corner. Good to see you over there, Chris
Rich.
Brockman, how are you?
Good to see you. I'm great.
And DJ Mikey D is in D's Nuts. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Rich.
Are you excited to have one of Jersey's finest in our... Oh, you've got the CD up there. It's a glare. I can't see what's
Slippery
on there.
Slippery When Wet.
Ah, I've heard of that album.
My Childhood at its finest.
Okay.
Your childhood, you were like 30 when that album came out.
Stop.
How would you say? Don't treat him like that.
Oh, wow.
Don't treat him like that.
Too much. Sorry, guys.
That was some disrespect.
Hey, listen.
Well, I was three, so he didn't even know if I was 30.
You know who's really been comporting herself really with respect for me all week long is Susie Schuster, for whom Jon Bon Jovi is definitely one of her favorite human beings on the planet.
Is she coming in like she might
like Jason Feller finding out the Stanley Cup was here, and he burst in.
He came out of bed.
At some point during the interview, Susie might be just like, get out of the chair and put her best mom ever sign right down and just say, you're done.
I honestly can't.
I might get the shoulder tap.
I can't believe she let you out of the basement.
Out of the basement. That's right.
She locked you in there.
Yeah. Very good. As I mentioned, lots going on, including the latest on Shohei Ohtani. Let me just say this straight up again for those who need to hear it in the back or in the depths of my Twitter feed. I want Shohei Ohtani to be completely cleared. I want him to have absolutely nothing to do with wiring money to an illegal bookmaker here in Southern California. I want nothing but Shohei Ohtani to emerge from this with the same sterling reputation that he had the day Major League Baseball opened up its season with the Dodgers and the Padres in South Korea. And I woke up that morning and I saw the story on ESPN that ESPN had broken that $4.5 million of Shohei Ohtani's money wound up in the bank account of an illegal bookmaker in Southern California. And his interpreter and best friend, BFF, his interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, said that he was the one that was deep in debt. He was the one that met this illegal bookmaker at a poker game in San Diego a couple of years ago. And he was the one that was gambling. And Ohtani was just a great friend who heard about how deep in a hole his friend was. And what a hole. $4.5 million for somebody that was making only a couple $100,000, $300,000, $400,000 a year. He said his buddy bailed him out. And then as ESPN was going with the story, ESPN got a call and a statement from a law firm saying Shohei Ohtani was ripped off. And I guess forget all those things the interpreter had said. Ohtani was ripped off. He knew nothing about it. And that started the whole to-do. And Ohtani did not speak to reporters after their second game in South Korea. And then we hadn't heard from Ohtani until he sat down in front of reporters when he got back to Los Angeles to say, I got ripped off. Through a new interpreter. And so we're just wondering, and I asked so many questions about how would a guy not know that $4.5 million is gone? How is $4.5 million get taken from him without him knowing? And what are the mechanics of such a thing? And why would the story change? Those are the two things that I kind of want answered. And also, why isn't Mizuhara in jail? I mean, why hasn't he been charged with the crime? Like, what's up?
Exactly.
Right?
Yes.
Something's fishy.
Well, the New York Times, Tim Arango and Michael S. Schmidt reporting last night that Mizuhara is in negotiations to plead guilty to federal crimes in connection with the purported theft, according to three people in the matter, saying that the investigation began 3 weeks ago. And because we also didn't really know last time we spoke to Tisha Thompson, the reporter from ESPN, about where was everything. And they were still trying to determine who's investigating this thing. Who actually did Ohtani and his lawyers go to say, look into this guy? Well, it appears we now know the investigation has been jointly led by the LA offices of the IRS Criminal Division. And the Department of Homeland Security, okay, along with the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Central District of California, and all three of those, according to the New York Times, getting together, saying that a guilty plea from Mizuhara before a federal judge, which is likely to include an admission of a range of facts related to any illegal content, could confirm the account that Ohtani gave to reporters 2 weeks ago, in which he said he had no knowledge of what happened to the money. Now here comes the paragraph that answers a burning question that I've had. Those briefed on the matter claim that prosecutors have uncovered evidence that Mizuhara may have stolen more money than the $4.5 million.
What?
$4.5 million that he was initially accused of pilfering. Great New York Times word. The people said, in particular, the authorities think they have evidence that Mizuhara was able to change the settings on Ohtani's bank account so Ohtani would not receive alerts and confirmations about transactions, the three people said. So I reached out to people that would know in the banking community today on this very subject matter, and it does appear it is feasible. It is not impossible, although there are still some questions that need to be answered, detailed about how exactly do you do this, because it's more than just ticking a box on, you know, fillintheblank.bankname.com. Just like, you know, ticking a box where remove alerts, remove this, remove that, because for the amount of money that's being wired, you still need to have an individual on the other end of the line from a bank call you and confirm, do you want this account to receive this money from yours? Certainly for this amount. And it is feasible that the, I was told, that the interpreter could actually go in, get all of this stuff, change the alerts to come to his phone or to have Otani's phone in his hand and act like he's Otani. And the other person on the other end of the line doesn't even know. Unless that other person at the other end of the line might be like a specific bank individual who would know the difference between the voices right. of Otani or not. Like, there still needs to be, like, how did he do this?
Yep.
How did he do this?
I think for me, that's the most interesting part and the part I'm dying to know the most.
Because, again, in our world of nature abhors a vacuum and conspiracy fills it up, it's like, why wouldn't this guy go down for Otani? If Otani on the back end would be like, you know, I got your back.
Yeah. Yep.
And there's been many stories like that. The pushback to that, again, I'm coming from all angles of this to try and square the circle. And if I have any agenda, because I did put this out on Twitter, like, hey, how could he just, you know, change settings to get away with $4.5 million disappearing? And apparently it's more than $4.5 million. Mm-hmm. I got a lot of pushback. Listen, Otani's got a ton of money. He could see it not, you know, not being there. Right. And I'm trying to tear this guy down. I'm a bad journalist and all sorts of stuff like that. I see that stuff. And if I have any agenda, honestly, it's I want this guy cleared.
Yeah, you're leaning to the positive
dude,
side.
Dude, I call
of
my son Kuptani.
Like, come on. Come on.
I want Kuptani because, again, when this story came out, Cooper came home from school because I hadn't seen him for a few hours. He comes home. He goes, Dad, the interpreter's guilty and Otani's innocent. And I'm like, well, this isn't a court of law. We're still trying to figure stuff out, but it does look better for Otani. Yeah, because my other part of it, too, is, and I love this guy. This guy is one of my favorite human beings I've ever met in my life. I broke the news of Mark McGwire's retirement, and I thought he was playing clean. He even looked me in the face and told me he was playing clean. And I love the guy, and I trusted him. I trusted him around everybody in my life. And I kind of still would because I love the guy. But, you know, part of me is I'm a little cynical. You know, sue me, I guess.
Also, this
no,
is...
No, don't really. I shouldn't say such things in this world anymore.
Deserves cynicism. Baseball has been sketchy forever.
But here's the pushback, though. The folks in the IRS and the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Attorney's Office are not waking up saying, how can we make sure the Dodgers are cool when it's all said and done? You know, how can we make sure Major League Baseball kind of gets their guy back?
Solid.
No. So if the because I'm sure they got IP addresses. I'm sure they got everything.
I would imagine so.
I imagine they got every single, you know, digital fingerprint on this whole damn thing. But the other thing I just need an answer to is, why was the initial story Otani knew and he was a good guy to bail me out? That's the whole thing, because I guess, and here's an answer too. This is an answer. Certainly, reading this New York Times story is that if this guy was so deep in the hole, and he was changing notifications and updates and potential phone numbers and email addresses and coming up with passwords and maybe had it all because Otani was just like years. I'm just going to go rake and throw and live life, and you handle all the other stuff.
I'm assuming that's the
case. That and that's the case. This guy is lying to this extent to Otani. Then I guess it makes sense that he thought he could get away with when ESPN knocks on the door and saying, we got a lot here, and we need some confirmation from you. And he's made available by Otani's new crisis management PR firm. And the crisis PR firm guy, according to Tisha Thompson's, like, give me a minute. I got to get up to speed. We'll get back to you. And then that person then, according to ESPN, made available fully with Otani's people's knowledge. This guy is made available for this interview that this guy would say, in fact, like what the authorities are saying is he ripped Otani off, or he's about to plead guilty to that. He thought he could get away with saying, I just got deep in a hole, and Otani's just a good guy, and he knew all about it, and he's the one who sent it with me sitting right there, and he's just such a good guy. He bailed me out. He thought he could get away with that?
Well, like Otani doesn't read ESPN or
won't find out about that?
Yeah, like...
Like, he thought, like, that was his first gambit? That was his first swing, I mean, if you will.
Bold strategy, Kyle. Oh, let's see if it pays off.
Dude!
Chris, Otani's from a different country. He probably isn't sitting. He's probably reading the newspapers, the coverage that is in his native language.
Or he might
not
be reading any of it. He might just be in a bubble. Here's what I do when I wake up. I'm raking. That's what I'm doing. Unless on the days that I'm pitching, and in the days now that I'm not pitching, I'm rehabbing. That could be his life.
I'm working out. He's not paying.
I just have a lot of questions still, is what I'm saying. But what a gambit that is. Just like, you know what? I'll just make this one up and hope Otani goes with it.
Right.
And the authorities will just be cool with it? Wow. Talk about slippery when wet.
Hey, look at you.
Oh, Rich, man.
I got to be honest, I was wondering who was going to be the first one of us to do it.
When did you think of that kind of...
Just now.
Oh, wow.
Because I know John Bon Jovi's in the green room, and I don't want to spend another second without him right here next to me.
I'm mad. I wanted to be the first one to do it.
All right.
I think about it all
Let's
day.
Do it.
Rich, lay your hands on me right
here. All right.
Come on.
How dare you, sir? This is a family show. The great John Bon Jovi, for crying out loud, in support of Thank You, Good Night, the Bon Jovi story, coming up next.
Come back.
Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people, or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs, because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back here, the radio audience on the Rich Eisen Show. Hey. We just showed on the Roku channel a clip of Thank You, Good Night, the Bon Jovi story, a 4-episode docuseries that premieres Friday night, April 26th on Hulu, which, of course, you can see right here on the Roku portal. The great John Bon Jovi is here in the 40 years.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what if I told that kid from Jersey 40 years?
I would never believe that.
Right?
I think when you're a kid and you get a record deal, you think... The year 2000, just because it was such a big number.
Yeah.
And at that time, I was going to be 38. And I thought, if I'm 38, am I going to have a family? Am I still have a career? Where's my life going to be?
Right.
But I never would have dreamt in 2024, I'm talking to you about a 40th anniversary, and still making hit records. It's crazy.
So have you seen the full 4 episodes?
Not the final. I think the final, the last time I saw a cut was 4 or 5 months ago. It'll have changed, but not dramatically.
Right.
So you know, I stayed out of it.
You did.
I really did.
How long did you sit down for it?
Oh, God, repeatedly over the course of the 2 years. But I wasn't in the editing bay. I'm not a producer of the film, you know, nothing like that. I had to give creative control to God.
So, okay. So you sat.
Not a puff piece.
Not a puff piece. And you, so obviously, rest of the band sat down. Bruce sat down as well?
Bruce, Southside.
When was the first time you met Bruce Springsteen?
1979.
Where was it?
I was in a cover band. I was still in high school. And I was singing a song called The Promised Land by him.
Yeah.
And I turned around and he was at the microphone.
Come on.
And I was like, and someone has a picture of it. I mean, it's out there. So the first time I met him, I was literally in high school.
What do you mean he was standing? So you had no idea he was...
No, he was in the bar and he jumped up on stage and he sang the rest of his song with me. And, you know, and then they kept an eye on what I was doing. And 3 years later, I wrote Runaway. I stopped playing other people's music. I was like, hey, wait a minute. I don't think I should be playing other people's music.
Right.
You know, and I quit that cover band, which was my band. I became the lead singer in someone's original band to learn the craft. Short-lived, but nonetheless, it was a first foray. I started writing songs. 2 years later, you write Runaway, and then a year later, I have the same record deal 41 years later.
I just want to rewind a little bit, because how did you just keep singing when Bruce Springsteen hops up and you're in high school?
We were all fans. In Asbury Park, the cute adage was there were 10 Asbury Jukes, 7 members of the E Street Band. You turn around, you're going to bump into one of them. They were always around, you know. And so it wasn't an odd occurrence to see Southside or Bruce. Southside produced some of my first demos in 1980. I was still in high school.
Still in high school.
Yeah. Yeah, I was the kid. You know, it was like, oh, yeah, there's that kid. That kid.
That kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, heck of a kid. No doubt about it. I mean, I just saw Bruce at the Forum the other night with my wife, who is a huge fan of yours as well.
Thank you.
And 74 and killing. 3.5 hours.
Killing it.
He sounded the same.
He's unbelievable. Yeah, he's a specimen, that man.
Yeah. So why are we calling it Thank You, Goodnight? Why are we calling it that?
Well, I find it as a term of endearment, to be honest with you. Some will think that it sounds like it's the end, but it's really not.
Okay.
When I approach the microphone at the end of a night, I realize that those folks have given me 2 hours of their life, to which I say thank you. And then I wish them well into the good night. And I mean that emotionally on a nightly basis. It's not thank you, good night.
Right.
No. It's thank you for your time. Thank you for giving me 2 hours of your life to be here with me. You know, and so... And there's also uncertainty because I've gone through a reconstructive vocal cord surgery that I'm coming through. But nonetheless, it was a daunting 2 years.
Well, I mean, you do know that folks, when they hear thank you, good night, that means the Bon Jovi story is over.
No. Like,
that's the sense that they would get.
It's anything but. There's a new album coming in June.
Great.
The single is on the radio. It's called Legendary, and it's blowing up like big, big. The world over, and the reception to this documentary has been unbelievable.
It's coming Friday, April 26th on Hulu.
You
know, it's the second night of the NFL draft, John.
Well, it is the second night, so.
You already know.
It is the second night.
You'll already know who the Patriots choose third overall.
My goodness, I don't have a clue right now.
Nobody does.
We need a lot. But there's a new energy in the building, so... You know, it's just the beginning of a new era.
So, were you a Patriot fan in Jersey, or?
So here's the great story, and people have asked me. They're very confused because of my Jersey roots. Bill Belichick and I go back some 34, 35 years. When he, Charlie Weiss, Bill Parcells, who allowed me to come to practices back in the 80s, because I was always so respectful and stayed out of the way and took that long hair and put it in a cap and was the water boy or the guy holding the plastic dish on the sidelines.
Yeah.
I mean, when the Giants won that Super Bowl against Buffalo, you could see it on NFL films. Guys were actually wearing T-shirts that I had made up. That were Bon Jovi shirts, because this is a day and age before compression gear and all this stuff. They were wearing T-shirts under their uniforms. And they were Bon Jovi shirts that I had made up for the Super Bowl. So I literally was the mascot. And so wherever any of them went, I went. And then by 96, I met Mr. Kraft. They lost that Super Bowl to Green Bay. And there's this great, you know, history of Belichick and I on Saturday afternoon going and grabbing a drink on the walk back to the hotel. The Super Bowl was different in 96 than in 2024.
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, right?
Yeah.
And so we literally in New Orleans could go and grab one of those big sugary drinks and be half buzzed on Saturday afternoon before a Super Bowl. You know, that's sort of where my relationships were. My son played. He's a walk-on at Notre Dame because Charlie Weiss introduced us to Notre Dame. Wherever Parcells went, we would go check it out, except for when he was at the Cowboys, which I left, you know, as soon as I visited.
Understandable.
Yeah, we have issues in New Jersey with Cowboys.
It's understandable.
But the Patriots, on the other hand, I just fell in love with the Patriot way and the idea that our friend was going to be the head coach. And, you know, and that relationship is built and built. I was with Matty Patricia last night.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's here with me.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, Belichick is as brilliant as they come.
Yes.
And I've been there listening to him talk football. I've been on the queue of him being the A talking football.
Yeah.
And I have been just a fly on the wall watching him talk football with other people.
Right.
What is it like him talking music?
Well, he is a music fan. I mean, most people in the world would never know that he was a closeted drummer. We bought him a drum kit years and years ago. Or that he would, you know, come to Europe on the road with us where nobody would pay attention to him being there. So he likes music.
He loves it,
but
right?
He likes being around it, you mm-hmm. know, which was cool. And
does he pick your brain when he's in
a... not in that way. I mean, he's just a fan of the music. I think it's foreign to him, you know, but the thing that everyone knows of his character publicly is not the same guy privately. He's just an incredibly engaging, warm family guy. Mm-hmm. You know, I've spent time with him at his home and him at my home. You know, I mean, we're really good friends. So this whole brouhaha with the dynasty was jarring. Because it's even, in my perception, different from the book, which the book I read cover to cover.
You're talking about the documentary that just came out?
The documentary, The Dynasty, you know, right. And the book I thought was incredible in a timeline of everything that had happened, and I thought it was a page turn. I couldn't put it down, and I mentioned it plenty of times, and I sat for hours of interviews for the docuseries, mm-hmm. and it wasn't the same guy that I know. You know, I think he deserves more credit. Because it was the three of them as far as, you know, the outside viewer looking in.
There's no doubt. I think what that documentary definitely did show is that when Brady was just a kid, and Bledsoe was the man.
You bet.
That there were a couple times where Belichick had to just stand his ground. Everything for me goes back to the movie Hoosiers, because that's my favorite sports movie.
Yeah.
Right. So you remember the scene where I've just got four on the floor.
Yeah.
That's my four on the floor. And, and the crowd and the fans are howling against Coach Dale. And Gene Hackman waves his, you know, leather satchel with his game plan at them. Like, this is what I believe in.
David Ansbaugh, the director.
Brilliant, right?
Yep.
So so Belichick did that a couple times.
And yes, he did.
And so when people are like, well, he just rolled the footballs out with Brady. It's you're missing a huge point about all this. And I think that and Brady was a perfect extension of Belichick's
Tommy
mindset.
Is one in a billion, not a million. Tommy is the unicorn.
Because he also, you know, maybe just from his Michigan experience, I don't know, everybody needs a little bit of love and a hug. He could respect the tough love and the tough coaching.
You know, that's hard.
You know what I mean?
That's hard, and that's Tom, and maybe that's his family upbringing and, you know, his mom and dad. I don't know why or how he kept his ego so in check, but the sacrifices that Tommy made for team, pay cuts, you know, team first, all the keeping their mouths shut the Patriot way, all of those things, it to me, one and one and one, made a dynasty.
Yeah, made six.
It made for 20 years.
You know, I've got John Bon Jovi here on the Rich Eisen Show. Okay, so we have some questions about your career.
Oh, boy.
And we'd like to get it together. This is exciting because we're let's play Celebrity True or False with John Bon Jovi. Hit it, please.
Celebrity True or False.
You can't handle the truth.
All right, there we go. Celebrity True or False with John Bon Jovi. First up, true or false, you made your recorded debut on a Star Wars-themed Christmas album in 1980. What? Really?
R2-D2, we wish you a Merry Christmas. That was the song. I was a gopher in a recording studio from the fall of 80 to like 82.
Was that the album cover? When
that is the actual album cover. And a guy that was making these kind of Star Wars, taking advantage of the success of Star Wars, said, "Can you really sing?" And I said, "Yeah, I can." And he said, "There you go. There's a microphone." Paid me $183 and RSO Records, which, you know, at the time was a big Polydor label. I was very excited.
I bet.
And so
R2D2, the little robot.
Right. R2D2.
We miss you. Merry Christmas.
So there was a lot of bebops.
R2D2, we love you.
Okay. You're our only hope, John Bon Jovi. You're our only hope. Oh, my gosh. All right. So that's true. Next up, you and Richie Sambora initially wrote "You Give Love a Bad Name" for Loverboy, but liked it so much you kept it for yourselves.
True. We were thinking it was interesting. We had two albums. First one did well enough. The second one doubled in success. It was a gold record, and we were doing well. But I noticed from afar, I said, Brian Adams, who had come up at the same time as us, was breaking through on a whole nother level. And I thought he just had a hit song with Tina Turner, and he, you know, had these kind of crossover successes. And I'm just scratching my head going, why aren't the first two album songs connecting in a bigger way? So we thought maybe what we need to do is write something for someone. And we got together with a friend of ours named Desmond Child, and we wrote "You Give Love a Bad Name." And as soon as that was done, we were like, I think we'll keep that. Good idea.
So you just heard it and you're just like, we can't give that away.
It was just good. It was good. Yeah.
Can confirm.
Yeah.
It was just good. Okay. Next up, true or false, John Bon Jovi. At first, you wanted to leave "Living on a Prayer" off of "Slippery When Wet," thinking it wasn't good enough, but a group of teenagers you were talking to convinced you to keep it.
Well, now that's a little stretch.
Okay.
The truth was, is when we wrote it, it was very simplistic. We wrote it with an acoustic guitar and a notebook and a stand-up piano. So there was the famous bass line and the drum beat and everything else that goes with it to make it what it is today.
Yes.
Was not there. So literally, Tommy used to work on the docks. All that was finished, but we're banging on our thighs. Well, that was what we had in the room. And when we went to rehearsal with the band and Hugh came up with that great bass line, we started to feel the energy. But when it was the day that we wrote it, I said, well, it's good. Yeah, it's good. It's good. I didn't know what it was until it was demoed with the band.
Okay. So where did it... No, not to ask you where
the story was. There was a pizzeria behind the demo studio in my hometown.
Yes.
And because we had made two records already, we were popular. And the kids from the local kids who were our age, we said, "Do you want to come and hear some demos?" And they heard a bunch of those songs and went, "Like that, like that." And you're playing them Wanted Dead or Alive, you're playing a Bad Name, you're playing a Prayer, you're playing Never Say Goodbye. They're like, "We like those." So did we.
So it was like a teenage focus group.
Four or five people. Like it's exaggerated. It's four or five guys that were Jersey guys sitting around eating pizza. Come on, Mike.
I can relate.
It was one of our cousins, Mike. You know?
Were you one of them, Mike? Perhaps one of them?
I never saw him at the Pony, but I saw Springsteen at the Pony.
Right. You know why I wasn't always at the Pony is because the Pony was known for cover bands.
Yes.
I was playing around the block at a place called the Fast Lane, which was original music.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I realized when I was still too young to drink, the way out of here is not going to the Pony to play other people's music.
Yep.
My band, would go over and watch Bruce sing cover songs with the local bar band because that was where you went for the fun.
Yeah.
But I was playing to 50 people two blocks over, cutting my teeth playing my own stuff.
Have you ever heard a good karaoke version of a song of yours by anybody ever? And where did that happen?
I don't know. I'm sure there are. You know, I've been
in a spot where it's just like, I'm going to go up. And then, I mean, you look on the screen and you see your lyrics coming. You go, oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't go to karaoke bars often, obviously. I was at Charlie Weiss's son's wedding.
Yes.
And the trumpet player in the wedding band started to play the bass line from "Living on a Prayer," and my head sunk. I was like, "Oh God!" And now you got. I'm going, "Oh no!" You know what this means? I got to get up there and sing with a trumpet player playing the bass line of "Living on a Prayer." But you know, I was a good sport, and Charlie Jr. got married, and you know, I had to go.
Yeah, it's everybody just swings to you in the room.
By the way, and you probably rocked it. So.
All right, I love it. Okay, couple more. This one is this one's a doozy. John Bon Jovi, celebrity true or false? True or false? You once kidnapped Michael Jackson's pet chimp Bubbles and took him to a hotel bar in Tokyo.
There was no ransom held for Bubbles, but the story was is we were all in the same hotel. We had gone up to see Michael. We hung out with him a little bit and asked him to come down and hang out with us just to get the poor guy out of his room.
Yeah.
He didn't take us up on it, but he did send Bubbles.
He
partied hard. True story. True story. It was in a hotel, not in a bar, in our hotel.
Okay. And you did not kidnap.
No, we did
not. He willingly sent bubbles,
but he, you know, he wasn't very socially, you know, comfortable with other bands.
Sure.
And stuff, so.
Well. So
true story. Bubbles came down practically smoking a cigar. Like, hey, I'm Bubbles. What do you got? How's those girls?
Did you think it was like a prank at some point?
No, because we knew Bubbles was there with him. Okay. I mean, when you meet Michael Jackson, he was so striking. You know, you walked into his room and his manager took us up to see him, and it was Richie and I. We went up to his room and Michael literally had the bullet belts over the top of it in his own hotel room.
Mm.
And he enters his own hotel room and your eyes go wink womp because it's Michael Jackson.
Right.
And we make small talk for a while and he was incredibly engaging and wonderful. And we said, man, you know, we're having fun. We got a couple of days off here too. Come on down, you know, have a cheeseburger, you know, typical Jersey bar band stuff. And he demurred, but he sent Bubbles down.
So then my last follow-up question, did Bubbles have the cheeseburger?
Bubbles definitely had the cheeseburger, the booze. He was like all over my wife. You know, he's like, hey, babe, I'm Bubbles.
Now, this last one, we were told this. We didn't read this anywhere. We were told this by Lou Diamond Phillips when he was on the show.
Yes.
So last one, true or false, you made a quick cameo in Young Guns 2 as a prisoner that was immediately shot in the chest.
Yes.
That's true.
True. I was there writing the soundtrack for the movie. I wrote Blaze of Glory and then subsequently the soundtrack. And so they said, you got to get a costume on and, you know, get in here. And so I had to jump at the chance to do that with these guys. And I didn't even get out of the pit where the prisoners were. They shot me and they said, shot through the heart. And YouTube was like, haha, very funny. I wanted 17 lines, you know, my own close ups. They were like, no, you're dead. So that was the end of
it. So that was it.
That's it.
Is that the only movie you've been in?
No, I've actually done 12 movies. I started studying as a result of that. And I had such success. I won a Golden Globe, was nominated for an Oscar, number one record for Blaze of Glory. I was like, this is easy. So I started writing more songs for movies. I got my hands on scripts and I said, Emilio and I, who became very close, was learning hobbies, basically learning how to ride a horse, shoot a gun. In his race car movies, he's racing a car. I thought, these guys are doing really cool things under the guise of acting. I started to study the craft of acting and enjoyed it immensely, but you know, I still had a day job.
So you basically took the fact that when they're like, hey, you should be in the movie, and they immediately just shot you dead.
Shot me dead.
That was maybe should've an indication of their belief in your acting ability.
So you hit the
books? Is that what you're saying after that?
From there, I had to study the craft.
Fantastic. Yeah. Celebrity True or False with John Bon Jovi. All right, so this is awesome. This has just been great
thank
having you
brother.
Here, man.
So happy to be here.
And thank you, good night. The Bon Jovi story. Starts on the Friday night of NFL draft night, 4-episode docuseries on Hulu that you could see right here. Anything else you want us to know about it?
No, we're raring to go. New album June 7th. It's okay. Called Forever.
All right.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Cool,
yeah, you got it.
Thank you, Rich.
Jersey Strong right here on the Rich Eisen Show.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Terrific. Great to
thanks,
see you, man.
Guys.
Thanks for being
it's
here. Awesome, John Bon Jovi, everybody, right here. There he is. Woo. Is that it? Did we put him in the back right there? We snuck him in there. That's you. We'll send this to you for a new movie poster.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian, and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
back here on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I'm sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger, with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. We just saw a clip of Eli Manning talking about singing karaoke, because that's how we met, as a matter of fact. I just was saying, like 2018, when he was talking, everybody thought Eli's just, you know, straight-laced. He doesn't have much of a sense of humor. Now look, right? Did you see their Omaha production signed up with ESPN for 9 more years?
Yeah. Wow.
Yep.
Awesome.
Manning Cast will be going for a
It's
going
to be going on for a while. I think it takes to the end of ESPN's current TV deals. At any rate, long story short, how great was that?
Guys, speaking of karaoke,
Rich, there are moments in the show that are amazing.
Right.
That's
having an all-time great come here and just chill out and tell stories and just be as cool and chill as you want him to be and expect him to be and hope he can be, and he is. And you know, we've met a couple times before. You know, in different NFL events, but he's never been here before, just chit chatting. And this doc is going to be must see.
It's going to be amazing.
Yeah,
you know, it's going to be must see. And that's why I asked him, like, have you ever heard anybody sing a good version of your song?
Yeah, I mean, "Living on a Prayer" is one of them. Got to be one of the 10 most
popular karaoke songs ever, right?
Ever.
I'm gonna tell you guys, like, you wouldn't probably not know this to look at me and what you generally hear me listen to, but I've sang "Wanted Dead or Alive" more times in karaoke than any other.
That's
song.
That's your go-to?
That is. I have probably two go-tos, and that's probably one. That's number one.
What's the other?
Well, I usually do, believe this or not, Garth Brooks' "Friends in Low Places." I like to do songs that you wouldn't think I would do just by looking at me.
I like to do Madonna
when I go up there. So, but "Wanted Dead or Alive," without question, I've done that song more at karaoke than any other song.
At a long time ago, Jimmy V golf tournament event, back in the late 90s, when we would go to Charlotte, North Carolina, or Raleigh, pardon me, North Carolina, and there would be an annual golf tournament ESPN would be a part of for Jimmy V, raising money for Jim Valvano, and every celebrity would be there from the sports world. All the college coaches would be there. Barkley would be there. Jordan would be there. And a bunch of celebrities would be there too. And there was a big night there, karaoke night, every year. And the whole town would come because they would want to see famous college coaches and athletes sing karaoke. I once saw "Friends in Low Places" sang by Mr. Belding of Saved by the Bell.
Word.
That was one of the best moments. Stuart and I and Linda Cohn and all of us, we were cackling, laughing. Yeah. But the biggest moment was when Barkley called Jordan on stage, sat him down in a chair, and he got down on one knee and sang "I Believe I Can Fly" to Michael.
What?
I've seen that in person. And as you might imagine, it wasn't good. The concept, conceptually, great. The actual execution of it, not so much.
Could you imagine how viral that moment would be
if
we had cell phones and things of that nature back then? Holy cow.
So the Masters has begun.
Oh, baby.
And, you know, our breaking news drop with Al Pacino just wouldn't
Here
work.
It comes.
Yeah, it just wasn't work.
Am I? I see.
That's just not respectful of the Masters, I don't think.
Enough,
So we have a drop. We actually have a good one.
Time for a Masters update.
Oh my God. As if that's respectful.
Mashed potatoes.
Okay, good. Now good.
Music.
We'll deal with it. So do you have a Masters update? What's going on at Augusta National, Chris?
Hello, guys.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course, we talk Masters. We have to do it in a hushed tone.
By the way, that's the way I do the combine.
After a multiple-hour delay
this morning, please don't do this.
I love it. We have a four-way tie at 3-under par early at Augusta. Bryson DeChambeau had the lead solo. He got off early with birdies on 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, boy.
He's through 5 at 3-under. Eric Van Ruyen is also 3-under. Ryan Fox birdied 1, 2, and 3.
Fox.
He's at 3-under. And Byung-Young An is 3-under as well with birdies on 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. Very good.
No hush tones?
The bit runs dry, especially,
Jake Knapp and Denny Willett, former winner. Also at 2-under.
And then the music, too. I like the birds. All right, that's enough.
All right. I failed it.
Thanks.
Did you?
I was in. Did you hear
me? I was right at Amen Corner. When Brock,
I was right there with
Vern
you.
Vern Lundquist, last year on 16 for Vern this
year. Is that right?
Yeah, he's hanging him up after this year.
No kidding. Oof. Damn it.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
You know, I was getting, as in you could imagine, I was getting text messages from your missus during the Bon Jovi. I was like, where are you at? She was basically like, I can't come down and embarrass Rich.
No, seriously, like, and she, I mean, this is...
Yeah, she was like, this I is had her a childhood lot of Bon Jovi posters on my... I can't believe she didn't come.
By the way, John, he literally looks the same, just with gray hair.
It's John it's Bon, just, Bon Jovi,
It is
man.
John Bon Jovi.
I start rocking out. 11 years old, I think, the first time I heard a Bon Jovi song.
Dante, we were in the parking lot blasting Dead or Alive yesterday.
Yeah, right when it we was left amazing.
Dante in San Jose, California. You're here on the Rich Eisen Show. What's up, Dante?
Not much. How you guys doing?
What's on? What's on your mind, sir?
So I'm an A's fan, or was an A's fan, now that the final nail in the coffin has been, you know, set with them moving to Sacramento and inevitably to Vegas. I need some RES consulting help. What should I do?
Well,
ooh, tough one.
I like this.
Meaning what? You want to find a new team?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you got to go where the winning is, right? So just think pinstripes, Dante. Oh, there's enough.
See, Dante, you got to stay in state.
You want people to still like you and respect you as a human being.
Oh, yeah. So the Red Sox are where Dante should go.
I wasn't going to push that, actually.
Honestly, and the thing with baseball is you just never know which team's going to come out of nowhere and win a World Series or win a pennant anymore. You know, it happened like last year, the Rangers. How many people this time last year said, you know what, you should get on the Rangers bandwagon? Yeah. 0.0.
Seattle, but you're a West Coaster.
I do feel for you, man. I mean, you know, the A's are just right now, the fans are being done dirty. There's just no other way to put it. It's terrible.
Diamondbacks?
340 miles, D. You might as well just go with the Dodgers, man. At least you know you're always going
to
be
no,
in
it. He wants to respect himself in the morning.
Dante, I don't know if we're helping you.
I don't know what I want to do. I mean, I went to school in Arizona, so maybe the Diamondbacks.
There you go.
Okay. All right. Perfect. Great young team.
Go for a swim.
Yeah.
Is that where you're from?
Yeah. Never know.
No, I'm from San Jose originally. I lived in Tucson for 4 years, but you know, went to a couple games.
Why not the Giants then?
You know, if you were a Mets fan, would you jump to the Yankees?
Hell no. I got it. Thanks the call, Dante. And I know that sounds completely. And I appreciate him saying, hey. Wake up. You know, why would I jump across town? Right. That's the other thing. The A's are going to play in the minor league affiliate of the Giants.
That's insane.
Of their current crosstown, if you will, rival.
Wow, that's crazy.
So you know what we're going to do? We're going to leave Oakland to go to Sacramento and have no geographical affiliation attached to our nickname, our team name. We're going to play in front of 10 to 14,000 people and say, isn't this quaint? Because baseball is just never this quaint anymore. Well, you know why?
Intimate.
You know why? You know why it's not that intimate? Because it's Major League Baseball. They play in large stadiums in front of large fan bases. Yeah. So you kind of lose intimacy. That's not why you don't go to a baseball game saying, I want to have something intimate. You say, I want to see the show.
Yeah.
I want to win. And I want to root for a team from my city, not go have a dragged upstate to play in a minor league affiliate of the crosstown rival. Jeez. You know, I can't believe, like, I have to explain it. But the owner wants to go to Vegas, and I don't blame the league for wanting to be in Vegas. That's, I mean, the NHL went.
Yeah.
NFL went. I mean, and a very, very warm place must have frozen over for that to happen. I still can't believe the NFL is in Las Vegas, had a draft there, and a Super Bowl. Good Lord. And by the way, everything's still standing.
Yeah.
So don't you think the NBA would love to get in there?
They will have a franchise.
Okay. So baseball's like, you know, I understand it's at the expense of A's fans right now, but baseball, I imagine, wants to be in Las Vegas, Nevada. It makes total sense to be there. But when I was there, not everyone from Las Vegas was just like, oh, we're psyched. Mm-mm. The mayor didn't even seem to be like completely all in on it.
No, the mayor's kind of like, you guys figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although a stadium on the strip, I think, would be funny.
I understand it. And baseball would love to be in on that.
Yeah.
But still, the guy who's chilling out around in the Caesar shops is still not allowed to come.
Right.
Come on. Yeah. But that's, listen, the A's, though, to go to Sacramento and say, isn't this quaint? Isn't this lovely? For the next 3 years, come on out and watch Aaron Judge homer against us.
The owner said that.
My word.
That's still crazy.
It's like the owner's got a bobblehead.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Null. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.